really scary predator, and so all assemblages that have that really scary predator get a relatively large effect size from the assemblage, but it's really just derived from that one enemy. You just have to be very careful to guard against that, and be conservative in your conclusions. But I don't think we had that here. Clearly, the wasp and the lady beetle are very active foragers, and they generated the most displacements.
Oh, you can go on. I'm just
going to
hit escape
there. Oh, okay, great.
People want to go.
Yeah.
Can you find out another way to expand that? What about the caterpillars? Do most caterpillars? I know about the Zetabox doing that. Do a lot of caterpillars escape in that way?
With the silk drop
or
technique?
Or in a way where they're basically not feeding and so therefore acting like they're dead according to plant damage or temporarily dead?
Yeah, there are a number of really, really fun defenses that in some way curtail their herbivory rate.
But if you took all of the herbivores in your system, what percentage would have an escape effect like that?
Oh, right, right.
Flea beetles.
Okay, yes, great one. Flea beetles, they launch themselves, miles away, at a threat, and they've got to find their way back to the plant. But like loopers, they do this kind of flicking, they kind of defend themselves. Imported cabbage worm.
Relatively common among the ones that you're working with, or wouldn't be working with.
I was going to say, no, like the fear effect that we observed might not be borne out in these other ones, because they're kind of just... kind of dopey cows. So they're just feeding. If they get hit by the predator, they have to just deal with it. They can encapsulate an egg. They can flip back. I chose this system because the diamondback moth larva drops down on the silk, so it's a very distinct and easily measured.
Thank you.
Hi.
Using genetic markers to reveal routes of invasion by Western cornworm into Europe. Nick.
Thanks. Yeah, so this, although I now work for Tom, this really pertains to work I was involved in during my time in France. So how can we go about using genetic markers to infer some of the routes of introduction of the invasive WCR populations in Europe? There we go. So just to set the scene, here's a map of WCR.
As Susan mentioned, this is sort of a broad overview of the work that André Freitas has been working on in collaboration with a number of researchers involved in Lepidoptera systematics. And so here we go. So this presentation will cover one of Andreas's research lines with butterflies, which is started in early 1987. When he first realized that immatures provided were an important source of information for systematics and other studies. And since those early days, he's actually dedicated much of his time to collecting and rearing and describing butterfly immatures. Now, modern butterfly systematics has really put a lot of weight on data based on adult morphology, with a preponderant contribution of both genitalic and wing venation characters. He admits that he has also contributed to this proliferation, but recognizes that many other character systems do exist. So broad approaches were provided, especially by Ehrlich, who called attention to the use of different character sets, such as thoracic or muscular characters, which may be very useful in defining butterfly groups. So we're going to focus on the Nymphalidae as an example of how immatures can provide structure to phylogenetic studies. So up until about 2000, the year 2000, there was no really well-resolved phylogeny of the Nymphalids. Many proposed phylogenies were combs, as you can see here in ACRI 1984, with only a few groups forming sort of clusters together, but really the base of the tree showed very little resolution. And then surprisingly, as the research progressed, we actually lost resolution, which I guess is science in progress, but it was very dissatisfying. And this is where Andreas really realized that we need to move into additional character systems to try and provide resolution to this really important group, which has been used for many different studies, both ecological and behavioral. And so having that resolved phylogeny is very important. So several reasons really pushed Andreas into this field. To begin with, he's a field biologist, and he had many opportunities to observe and collect immatures in the field. And even though Mueller had provided much inspiration in 1886 for the study of immatures and in association with butterfly systematics, the data sets available used very few larval or juvenile characters. And there was no consensus of these internal relationships in the Nymphalidae. And this could be very important in simulating future ecological and taxonomic studies on this butterfly family. And so for this first part of the study, we're going to Andreas wants to show a summary of the phylogeny of the Nymphalidae, focusing on the contribution of immature characters and adult characters to the resolution of this phylogeny. So among butterflies, the Nymphalid family is a large family. There's 6,500 species worldwide and exist in a number of different habitats and are found in all continents except Antarctica. There is a great deal of both adult and juvenile morphology, as you can see here, and the structures and wing pattern morphology is quite varied. The Nymphalidae were usually grouped by reduced forelegs, but since this character is also present in male rhyodinid butterflies, it may be that the tricarnate antennae in the adult is the best synapomorphy that pulls together the entire lineage. So the first step to describe all this variation was to score a set of taxa. And in this study, 94 species out of the 213 that were examined were scored, and all with data available for immature larvae, which is a fairly major larval data set. Now, the characters, like I said, were drawn from all life stages. There was 134 drawn from the immatures and 100 from the adults, which is a fairly balanced data set considering how few characters were scored for immatures historically. And there were attempts to include a good sampling of the taxonomic diversity within the Nymphalids, taking individuals from all the major natural groups recognized within the family. And so some of the characters that were scored include egg morphology, both the dimensions, shape, structures, microsculpture on the outside, as well as additional characters. So within the first instar larvae, ketotaxy, cetal size, and morphology were examined. Last instar larvae, there's coloration, various structures, social maps and behavior were examined and scored. And then within the pupae, Andreas scored general shape, morphology, and structure, in addition to the traditional wing, genitalic characters within the adults, as well as antennal and behavioral and chemical characters. So this is just a summary of the tree that was obtained. As you can see, it's fairly extensive. And here is a summary of the relationships that were found. So at the base of the tree, we have the basal Libithiini, sister to the remaining clades of the Nymphalids. And then we have the Danoid lineage, followed by the two sister groups, the Nymphaloid and the Satyroid. And you'll notice that, in particular, the really interesting thing was that the supergeneric relationships, which historically had been very poorly resolved, show a great deal, much increased support within this tree, which is very encouraging. And now what Andreas did is actually partitioned out both the immature and the adult characters. And so rather than focusing here on the names, just look at the resolution within the tree. You can see in the immature larvae, we actually have a surprising amount of structure provided in the tree, which strongly contrasts with the loss of resolution within the adult phylogeny. And this adult phylogeny does look very similar to the trees that were obtained by Akari that I had shown earlier. Additionally, a partitioned Bremer support analysis actually demonstrated that the main source of conflict within the tree was in the adult data set, with over 62 conflicting nodes of the 93 nodes in the combined tree. And the immatures were very important in defining many of the subfamily groups, including the Nymphalinae, a group which is often considered an unnatural assemblage of genera. But then again, when you included the larval characters, it pulled those genera together, forming a well-supported group. And this suggests that the characters of immatures are crucial to the butterfly systematics, particularly because they provide a new set of useful characters without the need of doing molecular work. And Andreas notes here that he is very appreciative of this because he much prefers to be in the field than sitting in a lab with a pipette. And so for future directions within this work, he really is hoping on combining this morphological data set with molecular data. And preliminary results suggest that the main branches within those two data sets aren't really that different. And of course, as usual, increased taxon sampling will be a goal of this future work. And particularly getting taxa from the Paleotropic as well as the Arctic. And this work is being done in collaboration with Dr. Nicholas Wahlberg. So now we're just going to dive into the nymphalids a little deeper, and we're going to look at the Ithomiini. So the Ithomiini was first worked on in the 1970s by Dr. Dalmeida, Dr. Mikkel, and Dr. Keith Brown. The first attempts to use immatures were done by these three researchers in the 1970s. Dr. Keith Brown continued the work after Dr. Dalmeida.